Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Renourishment is going to begin on November 1st, 2025. The window for beach renourishment is between November 1st through Memorial Day of 2026. During that time period, we hope to put 1.8 million cubic yards of sand on Pensacola Beach to protect the beach, to protect the infrastructure, to protect the homes, to protect the core, and protect the tourism value for Pensacola Beach.
So this is Mike Burns. He's the executive director of the Santa Rosa Island Authority, pitching to the Tourism Development Commission that they ought to fund beach renourishment on Pensacola Beach, which they have not in the past funded out of tourism development tax money, TDT money. It's been done a variety of ways. The way it was done most recently is really pretty squirrely. I'll explain that when we get to the point. But basically coming to them and saying, look, you know, the tourism ought to pay for tourism. We need to have the beach in order to have all of the economic benefits that we get from having the big old beach, and not the least of which, of course, is the tourists who come here and fund our economy, basically. But, you know, you guys, there's no reason that TDT money cannot pay for this.
That's what beach renourishment does. It attracts tourists and it protects the residents. But even more, it protects the infrastructure on Pensacola Beach. The sand is infrastructure and it protects the infrastructure. Florida Power and Light, just in the last year or so, has put $28 million invested into Pensacola Beach, Santa Rosa Island Authority, to protect their infrastructure in hardening the lines on Pensacola Beach.
So the idea of having the sand there is, of course, you know, you have a big, beautiful playground, okay? Of course. And, you know, the golf eats away at that playground. But if you renourish it, then you have a bigger playground. But that's not the only reason for it. The distance from the line, the water line, back to, for example, the dunes, or then, of course, it's also more distance to the houses. It's more distance to the other things that we've built. As you heard him say, they say there, it is a piece of infrastructure, but it also protects the other pieces of infrastructure. You know, Fort Pickens Road, that every time there's a storm, it seems like, you know, 50% chance, coin flip, you're going to have to close that road, not because of just, you know, you need to keep people out, but because it's going to have overwash with the sand, or it's going to have fallen in areas because of, you know, sandy roads away or water erodes away the sand underneath or whatever. Well, that's expensive. You know, and same thing in both parts of the seashore. Remember the times when you've had 399 over to Navarre has been closed down because it was inaccessible or because it was only one, you know, one lane was accessible and the rest of them, you can't really certify it. So that's what he's talking about, is all of the benefits of the sand as a barrier on a barrier island has for us.
If you don't do beach renourishment, your beaches are going to become narrower and your tourism is going to suffer. It's going to go down. You guys know this is a TDC board. Walton County is experiencing this right now. Their TDC collections are down 12%, 12%, because they have not done beach renourishment in the last couple of years. And I got that information from one of my buddies who serves on the board at TDC in Walton County.
So it's like anything else. If you're going to have it, you're going to have to pay to keep it up. And paying to keep it up is not cheap. But there are other benefits, not just from the vacationing side, but also from the, you know, protecting the local homes and building side.
You guys, many of you were here back in Hurricane Opal that happened in the late 90s, early 2000. Jennifer, I know you were. And Panama City Beach lost 471 structures. 471 structures because they had not done beach renourishment. They started implementing beach renourishment, and in a recent hurricane, Hurricane Michael, a Category 5 hurricane that hit Panama City Beach, they didn't lose any structures. No damage to Panama City Beach. Now, the other thing that happened is Panama City was back and open for doing business within months after Hurricane Michael hit that beach.
Because again, the distance of the beach, the waterline, from the houses is how much defense you have, perimeter defense you have against the water, the flooding, the overwash that's going to damage, you know, anytime you've even got a significant storm. So what's the money? Well, this is where it gets kind of interesting, actually. Again, Mike Burns, SRI Executive Director.
We put together, along with the county, $13.4 million. The Santa Rosa Island Authority has come forward with $10.1 million. So we got skin in the game. By no means. We have skin in the game. And in the process, the last time that the Island Authority came to the TDC and came to the county, we paid back $8.5 million and have saved $10.1 million. If we had that money, we probably wouldn't even be coming to you right now to ask for money. But we have $13.4 million plus $13.4 million from the state of Florida on a grant. That comes up to $26.8 million.
So you follow here, the SRIA has got money that they have saved, and then they had to pay back the prior. It was a loan from the county. The county loaned SRIA, loaned Island, okay? The people on the island loaned them money, and then they had to pay back that loan, and they've been saving. So they've been doing pretty well. Of course, there's, you know, what could have been done with that money had it not been had to be paid back to the county. We'll get to that in a second. So what's the price tag? If they got $26 million, half in bank, half, you know, basically in state grant, what's the price? Well, like everything, it's gone up.
And David and I have chatted many times, and he knows that the original numbers were much lower because the cost of sand was much lower. At $17 a cubic yard, the cost of the sand would have brought the cost of beach renourishment to $30.4 million. We'd be short about $3 million. But the cost of sand has gone up. Sand is now $20 a cubic yard.
Oof.
At 1.8, and that's where you get the $36 million. That's the difference in the number. That's where the shortfall comes in. And that's why we're here today to ask you for the $9.2 million.
So they're asking for nine instead of asking for three because the price of the project has gone up by six. You follow? 30 to 36. So then you just kind of get into some interesting questions about, you know, well, has it ever been done this way? And it hasn't really been done this way. And the reason it hasn't been done this way is because in the past, the way it had been done is not only did the county loan the money to SRIA to fund beach renourishment. This is in 2005 to 2006. It was after 2002 to 2003, it was renourished, okay? And then we had Ivan, and then it was 2005 to 2006, it got renourished again. So that's a short window. That's only, you know, a couple of years, 3 years, something like that. Then then after that, nothing for 10 years, 15 to 16, it was renourished. And then it's been about 10 years since that, which is normally how it would go. Even with, you know, Sandy, even with a bunch of the storms that we've had, about 10 years is kind of the goal. There's some dispute about how long it takes, how often you would have to do it, if you'd have to do it more often, the more often you do it. Because the way they put the sand down, and I'm certainly no expert on the physics of all this, but my understanding is that Tim Day is the Natural Resources Director for Escambia County, was kind of explaining this. The Gulf Action wants to shift it into certain patterns. Those patterns include things like creating, you know, how when you go out on the beach and go out in the water, there's, you know, shallow area and then it dips and then it comes back up, you know, and you have bars and then you have areas that create, for example, surf that the surfers love and that we all kind of love. You can't replenish it into those patterns. Instead, what you do is you bring it all up on the beach. And in the process over time, and that's going to change where everything is because you've pushed the shore out. So you've put sand over where all of that, all those features are in the water. Well, then the Gulf is going to do its action. It takes a while for the, maybe a year, I guess, or two, for the Gulf to kind of reshape it the way it wants it to be right now. We can't just rebuild it as it is pushed another 100 or 200 feet out or whatever we're going to do. And so you kind of have to wait for all that to happen. Anyway, the way this had been done in the past was the county loaned SRIA money that that SRIA had to pay back to the county plus interest. So the residents of the beach are paying for the sand that provides for the park that all of us use. The residents of the beach were paying interest on the loan for the sand to the county for the beach that the visitors and all of us use. And I completely agree with Mike Burns. That's ridiculous.
This Mike Burns on this, you know, the people that generate the money, you going to make the people that generate the money have to borrow the money from you and then pay it back with interest? Because we borrowed, I think it was like 8.5, and then we paid back 7% interest on top of that money.
7%?
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous for the people that generate the money to have to borrow the money so everybody else can make money.
Shame on Grover for having to make you do that, making you guys do that. Fortunately, we have a much better commissioner now in that district.
Ouch. I mean, he's joking, but he's not joking. That's David Baer, the chair of the board, talking about Grover Robinson, the two commissioners ago. Of course, in between you had Robert Bender. There wasn't a beach renourishment under him. And now you have Ashley Hoffberger as the commissioner. Okay, so the math of this became kind of interesting. Okay, $9 million shortfall. But actually, and they've never paid for this out of TDT money, which is amazing to me. I don't know why. I guess it's because it was too long ago. Anyway, they've never paid for it out of TDT, but it is allowed. It is definitely allowed. And one of the things that actually Hoffberger says that she wants to do is she wants to make it so that local option sales tax money can go for this, which makes sense because it's infrastructure. You know, but she says we can't do that now because it's not what the people voted for. The people voted for fire trucks and paving roads, which is what you get for your local option sales tax. So anyway, she wants to be able to use it for that in the future. That makes perfect sense to me also. So if you take right now, they have about $500,000 a year that the TDC has been putting away for beach renourishment. So they've got $2 million for 4 years. They've got $2 million. The sort of nice thing is if they add that 2 to the 13, that gets 15. And then you can get the state to up there. Match is apparently maximum 15. That would reduce the 15 plus 15 is 30. That would reduce it to only about 5.5 total. And so they said, yeah, we can do that. So good. This is one of those times where the TDC, you know, is going to do a thing that helps tourism. It's going to do it with tourism money. It benefits all of us. It seems like 100% win. It is a big price tag, though, $36 million. But, John, $36 million to make sure that the beach is big and beautiful and there for the visitors. You think that that's a price that makes sense? Given that, you know, what percentage of our economy depends on the beach?
Yes.
Very high number. Yeah, very high number. Now, just as a side note, I know some people will probably ask, what about Perdido Key? Doesn't that need renourishment? I mean, sure, yeah. But what's the difference? Anybody? Privately owned. You cannot use government money to renourish a private beach unless the privately owned beach owners want to give up their leasehold claims or at least, you know, access claims, basically. You'd have to have some kind of change in the status of that beach is the way I understand it. So that's why Perdido Key is done, you know, in an entirely different way. Even though it's worth noting that even with Perdido Key being private, you still have, remember this idea of Sand Island over on the intercoastal, right across from the boat launch and stuff? There's that kind of area there that they had three little islands exist right now, and what they're going to do is they're going to make that a dredge spoil area, so when the Army Corps comes in and dredges out that, you know, the intercoastal, they're going to put the dirt sand there, and then when you need it, you can renourish kind of directly across the land. It'll make it easier to do. So this is like, you know, years and years away from ever happening, but that's one of the things that they're actually working on. 523 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. So again, the county commission is going to have to vote on that. I haven't looked to see if they've updated their agenda for Thursday. They didn't have one when I looked for it on Thursday or Friday, but that'll be one of the things I assume they vote on. Oh, and also the very controversial Welcome to Pensacola Beach sign that is the replacement for the toll booth. It will be a combined sign / toll booth, the design of which I could say people are at best not fond of. They are at worst very unfond of it. And we're going to actually talk with Ashley Hoffberger at 7:35 about that. We're going to talk with her about the 9 Mile, the turfing of the 9 Mile ballpark. We might talk a little about beach renourishment, but that pretty much seems like a slam dunk to me, so I don't know that we'll spend a lot of time on that. But we'll definitely talk with her about the whole issue of why did a logo owned by Innisfree Hotels wind up getting 100% copied over into this one, and what's a better design so that people will actually like the thing that they're driving under, paying the tolls to go to Pensacola Beach on. Again, that'll be at 7:40 this morning. 524 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and, in rare cases, fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
It's always Sonny's here. This is Eldon with Sonny's Barbecue. When you're ready for slow smoke barbecue prepared by local pitmasters since 1968, it's always Sonny's. Visit us at 4 convenient locations in the News Radio area: Pine Forest, Navy Boulevard, 9th Avenue, and in Pace on Highway 90. With $10 big deals and all-you-can-eat ribs for only $19.99 every day. Kids eat free every Saturday, and don't forget that good old banana pudding, all served with a heaping portion of Southern hospitality. Open daily at 10:45. And remember, it's always Sonny's here.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate: managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR can help you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WER-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
There is no escape. Don't make me destroy you.
Good morning, 527 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Good to have you with us on this Monday morning. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. The number of measles cases in the U.S. has now grown to almost 900. The CDC says that's already triple the number of cases seen last year. Nearly 650 of those cases are in West Texas. One person is dead and several injured after a ferry crash in Clearwater. This happened. Apparently, a private boat hit the ferry, and there were over 40 people on that ferry at the time. The boat then fled the scene. Officials say it has been identified now, but it's not clear how many people were injured. I believe at least 6 of them were taken to the hospital after that crash.
Yeah, they were calling it a mass casualty event originally. Yes. Because of the number of people involved. And, you know, the only thing I haven't really seen, and maybe you know, is how big is this ferry? I guess it's like 40 people. Okay, so that's a pretty sizable ferry. How big was the boat that hit it? I mean, you know, to do that kind of damage, you figure it's a pretty sizable boat, you know,
yeah,
and then
would,
to have a hit and run, basically.
It would have to be a pretty large one. It doesn't say. It says the boat has been identified, but it doesn't really show a whole lot of information on that. So maybe that's something we'll learn here later in the day.
All right. Yeah, I'm just doing a quick check, and I don't see it just yet. Anyway, go ahead, sir.
And President Trump's popularity has reportedly dropped almost 100 days into his term. This is from a report on NBC. They did what they're calling a Stay Tuned poll, and they found 55% of Americans are now disapproving of how the president has handled the first 100 days of his presidency, with a 45% approval rate.
Well, you know, the good news about all of that, well, or bad news, depending on how you view it, is the president's elected for 4 years, not until his poll numbers drop.
Absolutely.
And the last I checked, there's literally no recall provision for the president. There's impeachment, but that requires high crimes and misdemeanors. And, you know, busting somebody's 401k in the chops doesn't really qualify as that. David, thanks so much for the update. And again, that's, you know, short-term bust in the hope that long-term we have a better situation all around. But people keep asking me, you know, well, Andrew, what do you think about the tariffs? And my answer, I'll be honest, My answer is A. I don't know what policy you mean, because the policy is different every, you know, what time is it? Oh, it's 5:29. What's the policy right now? You know, I don't know. And which I actually think is tending to undermine the effectiveness long term. It seems like the kind of thing that if you're going to get the effects, you've got to put a policy in place that's actually a policy. And because it keeps shifting, I'm just not sure. But second is, I don't know. This could be genius in the long run. You know, this could be really, really stupid in the long run. We know it's not awesome in the short run. We know that. But what's the long term, not just for the market, but for all the other sectors of the economy, jobs and manufacturing included? And my answer is, look, he's the president. This is what we're doing. I'm very curious to see.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Murder charges are filed now against a man accused of intentionally driving through a crowd at a Filipino festival in Vancouver, Canada, Saturday night, killing at least 11 people, injuring about two dozen.
The driver, a 30-year-old man, was taken into custody after initially being apprehended by bystanders. The suspect has a significant history of interactions with police and healthcare professionals related to mental health.
Fox's Stephanie Bennett. The North Korean government confirmed something believed to have started 6 months ago, sending troops to help fight Russia's war with Ukraine.
The North Korean state news agency claims its forces have helped Russia fully liberate the Kursk region. Ukrainian forces seized hundreds of square miles there in an incursion last summer. Russian leader Vladimir Putin issued a statement praising and thanking North Korean soldiers.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Ukraine's military says it's still fighting in Kursk. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 70 degrees. It is partly cloudy this morning in Pensacola. Family members have now identified the victim in a homicide from late last week. A body was found last Friday in a large field near Courier Place and Salem Drive.
There's never a car in that field. It's just a big empty field. It's not like a road or a driveway or anywhere you park, so as soon as anybody would see it, if you lived in this neighborhood, you would be suspicious.
And that's a resident who lived nearby that location. Channel 3 reports the victim was 20-year-old Andrew Sanders. His mother announced his passing on social media. Sanders had been last seen about a mile away from that location. He was reportedly found in a gray Chevy Malibu. Now, that vehicle was not his and reportedly had no tags or identifying stickers. That case is being investigated as a homicide. Anybody with information is asked to contact the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. Well, the city of Pensacola officially approving the donation agreement for the old downtown Baptist Hospital campus last week. Before that vote, City Administrator Tim Kinsella read this statement from Mayor D.C.
This Reeves. Project and these 38 acres, in addition to 200 affordable units already in progress, allows us to tackle our housing crisis at scale, demonstrating that we not only take our city's top concerns seriously, but that we also prioritize quality of life for existing neighborhoods. I believe learning or leaving blight untouched and unplanned was never an option for us. We should all be proud of this moment. I truly believe our roles as public servants are defined by stepping up when it's not our job and seizing opportunities to make Pensacola the best it can be.
And it was a unanimous vote on Thursday, despite some uncertainty about whether Escambia County will approve supporting that project with a donation to go towards the demolition cost. City Economic Development Director Erica Grancanolo asked council members to approve the agreement so the city didn't risk losing the state's $7 million grant award. Once that old hospital campus is demolished, the city wants to use the property for affordable housing projects. A juvenile taken to the hospital after a water rescue on Pensacola Beach over the weekend. That happened Saturday on Casino Beach. Officials say the juvenile was taken by ambulance to a local hospital. Their current condition is unknown. This comes after several recent incidents in local waters. Well, several people in the hospital after a crash involving the Clearwater Ferry and a boat. Investigators say it happened last night. The ferry and the boat collided into each other near their Memorial Causeway Bridge. At least six people were taken to the hospital. The injuries of the victims range from serious to minor. The cause of the crash is still under investigation. 534 at News Radio 92.3. And let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast with Brooke Richardson.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be looking at a beautiful day today, nice and spring-like, with temperatures warming up into the 80s. We will be seeing mostly sunny skies with a chance at a stray isolated shower. As you head into the evening, temperatures are going to be staying warm with temperatures overnight dropping near 67. Going into Tuesday, 83 degrees for that high, and by Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 71. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather App. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. It is 70 degrees right now in Pensacola and Gulf Breeze, and just a couple degrees cooler, 67 reported in Milton. Your next news at 6 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Spring cleaning and remodeling is in the air, and at Jonathan's Flooring, you can get your beautiful luxury vinyl plank flooring with the texture of wood, waterproof, and longer lasting. Jonathan's Flooring offers the most affordable pricing, first-class workmanship and installation with a large selection of tile, carpet, and the latest in luxury vinyl plank flooring. Performance and sustainability is what makes Jonathan's Flooring the best choice for your floors this spring. Stop by Jonathan's Flooring, North Palafox, south of 9 Mile Road.
Northwest Florida businesses pay an average 20% more for phone service. Data Revolution wants to change that. We are your local, service-focused VoIP provider. Right now, offering a free bill review and free installation for new customers. No matter where your team is, Data Revolution can help. Experience the service and support only a locally owned company can provide. Join the revolution at datarevs.com.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are the dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola, 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
See some of these political attacks, that's just because people know this is effective. That is because they're threatened by this model. Some people are threatened politically because the First Lady's been so good at doing this. But that's what that's about. It's not about the actual substance of this. And shouldn't we, as Floridians, put aside political agenda to embrace things that have actually lifted people up, offered them hope, and put them on a pathway to self-sufficiency? You should not wield political agenda to try to kneecap something that is helping people.
Well, as a former logic teacher, I would have a field day with this, much like I did have with the PSC screed that Governor DeSantis came to town to give. You know, whether it's the ad hominems, whether it's the poison language, just, and, you know, every part of this, it's amazing. But we'll give a chance to respond to Alex Andrade, at whom that was directed. And also, you know, raging liberals like me who just are out to get DeSantis for our own political purposes. I just can't even say it all out. Anyway, Alex Andrade, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Hey, well, so, I mean, why is it that you hate Hope Florida, you hate getting people off of public assistance, and, you know, you've given into the dark side of liberalism and are against every conservative thing the governor stands for? What's wrong with you?
Well, Andrew, there was a revelation yesterday at the counter-scheduled campaign event the Governor DeSantis did at the same time as my committee this week.
Wait, he did it again? No, he did not. He did it again?
In Jacksonville, but I was operating on the assumption that Hope Florida was like a program with metrics, but according to Casey DeSantis, Hope Florida is an idea or a philosophy.
I heard that. Yeah. Don't they have an executive director?
To me, no. He resigned last week.
Oh, okay. Well, they had an executive director.
Yeah. But I thought Hope Florida was a program, and like that's what began my, you know, research into Hope Florida was how many times Hope Florida was referenced in the state's largest contracts or Medicaid managed care contracts. Apparently, they're only referenced in the state's largest contracts because it's an idea. and a philosophy that we were going to make all of our managed care companies, I guess, promote or prioritize. But no, as folks who probably listen to this radio show are fully aware of, my main concern has been this funneling of $10 million in Medicaid money to the chief of staff's PAC. So we've obviously been looking into that, and we wrapped up.
Clarity, for people who haven't been, the former chief of staff for Governor DeSantis is now the Attorney General, James Uthmeyer. He's at the center of all this, in your opinion. Although he's denied any knowledge, any involvement. He's said, my hands are totally clean of this, right?
Yeah, he claims that he had no idea about the settlement, which it's just patently untrue. The state never made an announcement about this settlement. The state never publicized it. Unlike every other state that settled a claim against Centene over this one issue, Florida was the only one that didn't publicize it. And then James was cold calling the people who took this money from Hope Florida before the Hope Florida Foundation board even knew this money existed or was in their bank account. Like, James was the one telling people where the money was before anybody else knew. So I find it hard to believe that a chief of staff, one, didn't sign off on the settlement that AHCA agreed to with Centene. I'm pretty sure you'd want to check with your boss as the AHCA secretary before you sign off on a major statewide settlement. And then he was also telling these people where to go find and ask for the money before anybody else knew that money was there.
Money which then eventually winds up in the hands of a PAC he oversees.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so nothing to see here, no scandal, but you're done, because, like, they were supposed to, they were supposed to show up and testify, right? And now, you had a hearing yesterday, but I thought the hearing was today to talk about this. Am I confused somehow?
So the three final people I really wanted to talk to in, like, my capacity as a subcommittee chair were Jeff Aaron, the attorney for the Hope Florida Foundation, who, like, helped these two groups get this money wired to them, and then the two leaders of the two dark money groups, Mark Wilson of the Florida Chamber of Commerce and Amy Rosenhausen of Save Our Society from Drugs. Jeff Aaron, after my schedule came out for this week, immediately emailed me and said, I'm totally transparent. I definitely have nothing to hide, but I'm only available on Wednesday and Friday this week after my meeting was announced for Thursday. And so I kind of just, like, called his bluff, and I said, okay, well, I'll accommodate your busy schedule, Jeff. Let's have a special meeting just for you on Friday. And then I think yesterday, the day before, he backtracked and said, well, no, I can't speak because of attorney-client privilege, which listeners might not understand. When you're the attorney for a public board, there's almost no circumstance where you can cite attorney-client privilege other than, like, active litigation or impending litigation. So for Jeff to say that, he's either telling me that or he's lying. So from what I can tell, you know, the two executives from the two dark money groups, Mark Wilson from the Chamber and Amy Rosenhausen, they didn't show up yesterday morning, I think because they've both at this point hired a lawyer and do not want to incriminate themselves. And then Jeff Aaron, obviously, it's the same situation. He does not want to testify under oath about the fact that he helped defraud the charity that he's the lawyer for.
Alex, my wife actually got a text from the PAC that is the pro-DeSantis PAC that used money, I guess, from his leftover presidential campaign fund, telling her, call Michelle Salzman and persuade her to stop being so liberal. And then other people, I did not get one, but other people got text saying the same thing about you. And so I was curious. I'm sure people contacted you. I was curious what the ratio was of people supporting you in what you're doing or people criticizing you. Like, how effectively did he rally the troops to swamp you with criticism?
It was nearly 100% supportive of what we're doing in the Florida House and supportive of what I'm doing related to Hope Florida. I owe Ron PAC. Okay, our governor named his federal PAC Ron PAC. Just mortifying. But I need to send a thank you letter. I need to send a thank you letter to Ron PAC, because all I got all day when those texts went out was, hey, I don't know what's going on, but keep doing what you're doing, because obviously, like, he's freaking out. You know, like, you know, people who are aware of the Hope Florida stuff were like, do not let them intimidate you. Don't blame. Keep up the good work. And I guess I got to send a fruit basket or something to Ron Pack because all I got was encouragement.
That's amazing. And I heard from Michelle that it was similar from her as well. So the follow-up to this now is, because you last Friday on this show, I thought very vividly, claimed that James Uthmeyer has probably committed wire fraud and money laundering. And he, I think, is now threatening you, or maybe someone else, I forget who said, but threatening you with legal action for defamation and a complaint towards the bar that you have exceeded your legal authority, violated your legal obligation as an attorney. I don't hear you quivering in your boots over this, but maybe you can respond to those, I don't know, threats?
Yeah. Well, one, I'm very familiar with the defamation law.
I would say so, yes.
Handle defamation cases in my day job.
You've run legislation on reforming the defamation law, so I think you do know it. Yeah, yeah. All right.
Truth is always an absolute defense to a defamation claim, and I would not have said anything that I've been saying if I didn't know the truth, if I didn't have documents or circumstances that fully supported what I'm saying. And also, additionally, it is kind of mortifying that our attorney general does not understand what a legislative privilege is. There's this common law, you know, almost absolute privilege that says in the due course of legislative activities, or it would be the same for city council members or county commissioners when they're engaging in their official activities, there's almost an absolute privilege against lawsuits like defamation. You know, for the same reason we have the SLAPP Act about public discourse, but it's like an absolute privilege about officials in their official capacity. So our attorney general really needs to start looking into like what the law says on some of this stuff, because it just gets more and more mortifying every time he, you know, says something kind of silly.
So he may have committed two crimes, and in the response to the crimes, he's creating a claim about defamation that shows he doesn't understand that law either. Okay. All right. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. Let's switch gears a little bit, because I'm sure we're not done with all this, but, you know, I mean, you are done because you couldn't finish an investigation without any more testimony, and you've now basically said, I've done what I can do. This is a matter for who? The feds? Department of Justice, I presume, is who's involved in this now? You've talked to them, right?
Yeah. I've talked to law enforcement. You know, law enforcement's following up with me. So it's bigger than a subcommittee. The House might not be done. I mean, Danny Perez, the speaker yesterday, said we're not done. And, you know, we still expect the agencies to produce the documents they've not yet produced. And based on what those documents say, we'll do something. It'll just be outside of my subcommittee. Like, my subcommittee was not the right venue to go beyond this point. It just wasn't. Like, I'm just the guy asking for facts to make policy decisions. That's literally the purpose of committee meetings. That is done. So any further action does have to be handled by somebody else. Law enforcement, I'm sure, will be continuing to research and look into it and investigate, because this is not going away.
I don't know why everybody's always coming after your law license, Alex. It just seems so wrong. and also over the...
Just
produce the documents, you know? It's not hard. All right, I'm sorry. I talked over you. What did you say?
I said I'm shaking. You know, petrified, terrified, mortified.
Super shook, I can tell. Before we let you go, I did want to ask you, the session is going to extend at least for a couple of days because the budget's not ready?
That's what it looks like. I get to go home this weekend.
Okay.
Meaning we're not negotiating this weekend.
Oh, okay. So we're not even that close.
No, we still haven't resolved our allocations item, which I talked to you last week. The big holdup is our tax package.
Okay.
And just how much in the form of taxes we want to cut. The Senate wants to cut less than we do, and the House is still very bullish on cutting as many taxes as possible.
Oh, I said last week. There is one. We talked with Darian Schaefer, and of course, I know you know the news. People here have been very worried about the TDT bill, the TDC bill that, you know, opening up of TDT funds for almost any purpose under the sun, eliminating TDCs, and putting an 8-year sunset on so people have to vote to. Is that bill really going to have? It seems devastating for our area if it comes to pass, or at least it could be. But I want to, you're the legislator. What's happening here?
I think that's getting rolled up in the allocations discussion too. I don't know where, what the Senate is saying about it. So from what I can tell, you know, I think that that's our position. And right now it's just, it depends on how allocation negotiations go to see exactly where that lands. But no, we have fights over TDT money every single year. We have fights over Visit Florida every single year. And the end result is always, you know, agreeable to most everybody and most every stakeholder. So, while I don't know, because I'm not a part of those specific discussions on that specific policy this year, I would have been when I was the TED chair the past 2 years, but now because of, you know, my role in the healthcare budget,
right,
like I'm not part of those conversations. And so I wish I had better information, but I do know it's just like it's part of the negotiation process right now.
Okay. And I know in years past, obviously, every year we have conversations, like you said, about Visit Florida and funding at the state level. But man, I'll tell you, our local folks are freaking out over the potential impacts of this bill, and which, you know, I'm sure you're aware of. Alex Andrade, state representative for District 2, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for what you're doing. I'll add my voice to the keep going. Do what you can at this point. But as always, good to talk to you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Andrew.
You know, actually, John and I were just talking about this off the air while we were listening to that replay. It is sometimes a curse to have taught logic, reasoning, critical thinking, creative thinking for 10 years, which is me. I taught ethics and logic, two different courses. And one of the sort of problems with having taught logic is logical fallacies are just, you know, really obvious to me. And so the basic rule is there's a fallacy called the ad hominem fallacy, and that's just fancy Latin for to the man or against the person. And the idea there is that if, you know, somebody makes an argument and you say, yeah, but you're fat, you know, a normal person says, what does that have to do with anything?
Correct.
Well, normally people don't betray the good reasoning quite that vividly. But when Alex Andrade says, here's this $10 million. It seems to have gone to an illegal purpose. It looks like, to me, he says, it looks like, you know, money laundering and it looks like wire fraud. And then the governor says, you're a bunch of liberals. I mean, he might as well just call him fat. You know, just say that, you know, he's fat. And when, you know, UWF, you get a bunch of people that get put in on the board of trustees that are, you know, undesirable choices at best, and then the local community pushes back, and then Michelle Salzman files a bill to basically require that the person who's put up for a board of trustees is either a resident of Florida or a graduate of the institution. And I think there's some maybe minor tweaks that could have been made to that. You know, I don't know that you have to necessarily have gone to UWF to be on the trustees board at UWF. A resident would be good, but, you know, it's better than the alternative, which is another governor putting these wingnut, you know, some of them are fine, but, you know, generally speaking, that process. Okay, so when she runs a bill that says that and when the local community pushes back and he's like, oh, you're a bunch of liberals. I mean, he might as well have just said, you know, Michelle Salzman, you're fat. You know, like, you know, that could have been, you know, I don't like you. You make bad jokes. You smile funny. You know, you dress weird. Right? I mean, like, that's an ad hominem attack. It's a distraction. It's a smokescreen. It's designed to not directly answer the question. And you know how I extra know that this is a problem for the governor? Because the governor was a lawyer. The governor's not dumb. The governor's a very smart man. The governor knows the rules of reasoning. You don't get to be a successful lawyer. You know, you don't get to be the lawyer with the seals just by, like, guessing at what the rules of logic are. He knows them. He knows that if you're in a case and the other side starts attacking your person, they're doing it because they don't have the evidence to defend their guy. Because when you have the evidence to defend your guy, you give the evidence to defend your guy. And so when he starts saying that all these people are just a bunch of, you know, crazy wingnut liberals trying to tear down his conservative agenda, I mean, it would have just been more honest to call him fat. And we would have all reckoned. But see, I know that, and a lot of you know that, and the governor's hoping that enough of you don't know that. So I always consider it a great compliment when somebody attacks me personally. Because if you have to resort to attacking the person, making fun of their name, whatever. I mean, that's a real common one, right? That's why I don't, you notice I don't make fun of people's names? This is the thing, like Rush Limbaugh used to do that. I always thought that was a terrible mistake. It's not funny. It's not clever. It's not their fault. It, you know, make fun of people for things that they choose, you know? Don't make fun of people for things they can't control. Anyway, so I don't make fun of people's names. But part of the thing is, like, if somebody is resorting to that kind of tactic against you, they're admitting that you're right. And that they don't have anything better to attack you with. Because if they had better, they would use better. All right, this lesson in reasoning, logic, and analysis brought to you by... I don't know. No sponsor. Just free material on free radio that you get to listen to because, you know, somebody else pays the bill. I'm Andrew McKay.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
It's the 25th annual Crawfish Festival at Bamboo Willie's on the Pensacola Beach Boardwalk, May 2nd through the 4th. Come and enjoy live music from Swampland Revival, Sadie McClendon, Count the Years, Jared McConnell, and many more. Plus, be entertained by the fireworks Saturday night and lots of crawfish all weekend long. And of course, you'll want to visit the local artists along the boardwalk and enjoy the kids' crawfish race as well. It's a festival of fun for the entire family. Visit PensacolaBeachCrawfishFestival.com for more details.
The Big Bamboo!
Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10 when Brittany Hughes from Parks and Recreation will be on the show. She'll be discussing summer camps, where they're located, the cost, and how you can apply for a scholarship for your child to attend. She'll also cover deadlines to register, how to register, and will be available for you to call or text in with your questions during the show.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Why does everyone have to go on a diet?
Because in cheerleading, we throw people in the air, and fat people don't go as high.
Courtney, I'm 58 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. The funeral of Pope Francis is now over. The Catholic Church is going to begin the work here soon of selecting the 267th Pope. That choice will be made behind closed doors in a process they call a conclave. That's expected to get underway sometime early May, between the 6th and the 11th. One person is dead, several injured. This is after a ferry crash in Clearwater. A private boat hit that ferry and reportedly fled the scene. Over 40 people were on board. At least six people were taken to the hospital after that crash. And police still looking for a suspect in a shooting at a university in North Carolina. Now, that one left one dead and six people injured on Sunday. It happened at Elizabeth City State University, a school in the northeastern part of the state. University officials say one 24-year-old adult male that was not a student was killed. Other victims, including three students, were treated for non-life-threatening injuries at a nearby hospital.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. We don't know what the legislature is going to do with this proposal to basically open up tourism development tax money for all purposes. The House slightly shifted its position, saying that up to a quarter of the money could be reserved for tourism purposes. The Senate doesn't seem to be on board with this yet, so we're still waiting to see how this all shakes out. But, man, this could be really, really bad for our local economy if tourism money isn't able to be used for advertising anymore.
Stream us at